at the end of the day, it is kind of a penalty. And I think that's a mechanical way to show the devotion this character has to that god.
I know Will's going to hate that. I knew he was going to hate that because I've been laughed at so many times for saying that. Or things of that nature.
Religious penance. The hair shirt of ruining my class build by taking cleric levels.
Welcome to Monsters and Multiclass, your Dungeons & Dragons fix. I'm Kevin Odie.
I'm Jared Bornigal.
And I'm Will Melder.
And we'll be hanging out with you for a while to talk about anything and everything D&D related. On this episode, we are taking a look at the Cleric Paladin Multiclass. So let's dive into it.
Yes, so Cleric Paladins. Let's start with the Cleric. It's the holy chosen ones of the divine. They are full spellcasters, and their faith in their god grants them their powers. There's a lot of variation in playstyles based on the domain subclass that they choose, with some being focused spellcasters and others trying to be gishes, but eventually just being spellcasters. Takes 13 wisdom to multiclass in or out of. Then we have paladins, the holy chosen of the divine. Their faith in their god grants them powers and also sometimes their faith in an ideal. That sounds pretty similar. Okay, off to a good start. So paladins are definitely gishes, meaning they have some spellcasting and some melee capabilities, though heavily leaning into the melee side of things. They take 13 strength and 13 charisma to multiclass in and out of. So let's hear some first thoughts on this old multiclass. How about Kevin? How you feeling?
This one's rough. That's dealing with charisma as a spellcasting modifier and wisdom, and there's a whole bunch of overlap both in flavor and in some mechanics, especially in spell selection too, though paladins do get some unique ones, I guess. But I think it can be navigated. I think there's a couple things here and there that sparked a couple, or at least one, maybe two neat character concepts that you don't necessarily need a multi-class for, but you know, it adds that extra bite. That, like, yeah, I really committed to that.
Okay.
So I think there's a couple things to dive into.
Sure, and I'm sure we can explore that a little further. I'm curious. Will, how are you feeling?
It's not good. for much the same reasons. They're very, very similar, almost in people's heads more than they are in practice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got so much overlap that there's just so little you can squeeze out of it. And what you can squeeze out of it comes at a kind of oddly high cost. So it's just, I think it's not a great choice.
Yeah, I know it's been a big thing in my world specifically, but also just through these conversations, we've talked about how the paladin gets a lot more class identity when you separate out the holy aspects of them, the devotion to a god for any reason, and just make it about the ideal. Whatever their oath is what gives them power. And it's almost like the extrapolation of a knight making a oath that they will do something or protect whatever, and that is what gives them their power. If you disassociate the aspect of there being a religious tie to the paladin, then it makes the multiclass potentially have more value, but that's something that I have kind of done separate from it. If you look at the flavor of how the paladin is laid out in 5th edition, it's pretty heavily leaning into the holy aspects. It's like a tiny little asterisk that says, and sometimes they don't worship a god at all, and that doesn't matter. So, I don't know.
I disagree with that. I think the flavor text does a lot to drive home the point that they're pulling, it's divine magic that they're pulling out of the universe from such a devotion to their oath. And nowhere does it say, like, you need to, like, pick a deity or anything like that. When you go through the different subclasses, it doesn't give you, like, deity or god examples to pick from that fit with this class or anything like that.
Okay, then maybe I'll take back. Oh, go ahead.
I don't want to derail this too much, but like, there's this idea of a deity as like a dude. And there's also the idea of a deity as an idea, which is a more like kind of realistic and grounded version of theology. So like, in D&D, where these are like dudes, that distinction makes a lot more sense. Whereas the I'm like pulling power out of the universe to uphold an ideal is just like straight up religious from a different metaphysical perspective.
Sure.
Sure.
That's fair, where it's more okay. of like the, like, I know there's a lot of religions where it's much less about a deity and more about a philosophy. And I think that's actually kind of in line. Yeah. So paladins are more like the philosophical religion versus the deity religion, like clerics are.
Okay.
And even that distinction.
That's a neat distinction.
Yeah. I'm like totally good with just the, my main issue is the lack of clear distinction in the original creation of the classes. I would even argue that, like, as new ones come out, like the Oath of Glory has come out recently, and that has almost zero religious connotation to it. And I think that the Wizards of the Coast are starting to push in that direction a little as well, mm-hmm. which I'm definitely good with.
Yeah, or like, so like Oath of Devotion, the original paladin, and definitely the most likely to be ultra-religious in their flavor text. Just as many who swear this oath are devoted to gods of law and good and use their god's tenets as a measure of their devotion, and hold angels, you know, as their ideals and stuff like that. But it doesn't say, like, that's what you have to do. It's right. not saying you get your power from them. It's just...
Definitely.
They're your ideal, they're your guide, you devote your actions to them. But it is separate from a cleric, where it's... Cleric is more like almost like a warlock type
mm-hmm.
relationship, or instead of just like an entity, it is a literal god giving them power. But then the cleric's kind of like sort of in their service. That makes it sound more one-sided than I think it is. But
well, bringing it back to the paladin cleric aspect of it, I think we can all agree that if you want to be a paladin who has a religious devotion, the tools are already there. Absolutely. And you're not adding anything by putting a cleric class into your character.
No.
And that's where I think a lot of this frustration comes from. Even times where we've had just some not great multi-classes, you know, mechanically speaking, I think there's a lot that we can pull from flavor-wise. This one I really, really struggle with. And I think unless you have set a hard line in your game that paladins aren't religious, it doesn't really add much to then throw it on there. And even if you do want to have like a paladin who is, we'll say, even just semi-religious, and then a moment happens in game where you want to grant them divine powers, the Divine Soul Sorcerer is a better choice all around and fits the exact same flavor profile.
Sure, but you're not a cleric. That's not and that's an actual good. God.
That's good. I think that's a benefit. That's a plus. But yeah, I think that's like it's a benefit, because you can still have the god say that, like, you're my chosen holy warrior and this is how my powers are going to manifest in you, because that's what Divine Soul Sorcerer is. It's like a angelic entity has chosen you and mm-hmm. you get your divine powers. And then from that, you get access to the cleric spell list, which is, if anything, what you're going for. And you can focus on just charisma and just strength, which is what the paladin's already doing. So right. it's really hard. And I know we try to like divorce the idea of like, oh, well, you can do this other, you can do the same thing with another multi-class, but it really feels like it's just, it's already laid out there for you.
Sure. That's a fair point. I still do go back to, it's like, you are not a cleric. It's just, it is something else entirely. And if you don't like the idea of kind of some erasure of the flavor and all that, I want to really stick to it. And taking the actual cleric levels, I think, adds a lot more bite to the character concept and the multi-class, because it is a bit of a penalty in a sense.
Sure.
Like, you could get some new things out of it and some versatility, which we'll all get into. But at the end of the day, it is kind of a penalty. And I think that a mechanical way to show the devotion this character has to that god.
I know Will's going to hate that. I knew he was going to hate that, because I've been laughed at many times for saying that. Or things of that nature.
Religious penance. The hair shirt of ruining my class build by taking cleric levels.
It's maybe they are an Oath of Vengeance paladin, and they're a very angry person, and they have a tendency to play God and smite evildoers, or who they did, like they try and be judge, jury, and executioner, and they kind of have a change of faith and have some moment with an actual deity or something like that, realize the error of their ways, and then start taking levels in cleric, and maybe like life cleric or something like that.
Better. That same character concept, but realizing that the rage could not be suppressed. The danger could never be reduced. You start just fucking up your build so you can do less damage.
I was thinking like an evil deity as well, like seeking out a vengeance paladin.
Sure.
And kind of choosing them as their holy warrior, but less for the good of the universe.
Yeah.
Which could be probably a good NPC. And that's one thing I'll always say for bad multi-classes. They make great NPCs because that's it true, yeah. does not matter if they're around for just a little bit. I can make a paladin cleric multi-class and give them 20 wisdom and 20 charisma, and no one is going to argue about the stats. It's that's the no stat block that makes sense. No one's going to know.
Yeah,
right,
I was going
right.
to say, yeah, you just 20 in all three and there you go.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, I could definitely see that working. Definitely creates like a specific backstory. And that was a lot of what I was seeing as well, is if you're going with this route of a paladin who is devoted to an oath, and you are continuously doing deeds that center on that oath, like Oath of the Ancients, for example, which is a lot of preserving life, preserving nature. If you keep doing deeds like that, a god is probably going to notice. And I could very well see a story moment where a deity tries to connect with you, and you know, if you accept, here you go, here's some cleric powers, and you are now agreeing to be my cleric specifically. It's almost like a graduation of the oath into something more great and also now defined within the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Which sounds kind of interesting, but the fact that it is also a punishment in terms of your class build makes it a bit tough. So I'm sure we'll get around to character concepts again, but I really want to hear mechanically what does make this such a rough time.
So I mean, you do get some stuff. So access to cleric spell list, and right away from one level dip with your paladin, and then you start multiclassing into cleric, because like one of those events we were talking about. You also get cantrips, which paladins have no access to whatsoever. And then your first divine domain. And I mean, those are super varied. I mean, there's 14 official mm-hmm. cleric subclasses. I don't think it'll be too hard to pick one. Where it's like, oh yeah, that kind of works. If you go two levels, then you get your channel divinity. Yes, you can turn on that, and then whatever your domain gives you. And then again, more spell slots. Third level, you get second level spells.
So channel divinity is a good point and is something unique to the multiclassing rules that I think it really only comes up in this situation. So both paladin and clerics get a ability that is labeled channel divinity. And something that's interesting is that when you multiclass from paladin to cleric, you don't get a second use of channel divinity. The only way to get a second use or third or whatever more uses of channel divinity is by leveling up in cleric and getting to sixth level and whatever the next one is.
I think 18th or yeah. something.
So that is, in my eyes, kind of a downside to this already difficult to swallow multiclass. Is it's not even like you're getting an extra use of your channel divinity. You're getting a different use for your channel divinity. And that kind of hurts. I mean, I almost right. feel like that's an unnecessary shot in the knee to this multi-class.
Sure. So by that you mean they could use the feature between like the paladin or the cleric and pick between all their different options, but they still only get the one use.
That is correct.
For short rest.
Unless they go up to the cleric level that offers them a second use.
Right.
So like, you know, three levels in paladin and two levels in cleric, they get one use of channel divinity per short rest, and they just can mm-hmm. choose from their available pool. So it's kind of disappointing in my eyes. Like, that seems like one thing that could kind of save this if it was like, oh yeah, you know, here's a way to get a second channel divinity use early. You just have to have these really weird stats to make it work.
Sure. It does give you more versatility. Some channel divinities are really specific where they could be absolutely great, but if that situation doesn't come up, it's kind of wasted.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I guess with the optional class features and added Natasha's, both paladins and clerics could use their channel divinity to get spell slots back.
Sure.
So they kind of already took care of that.
Yeah. That is true, though. I could see it with, like, a Forge, Cleric, Paladin multiclass, where the Forge Cleric's Channel Divinity is, like, being able to make a key or something.
Metal items under 100 gold.
It's pretty situational and probably not going to get used every single short rest. And if you have a Paladin ability that's a little more worthwhile, then as you... I can't believe I'm forgetting this. What level do Paladins get Channel Divinity? Is it second or third?
It's third.
It is third? Yes, it is third.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah, when they take their oath.
You have three levels in Paladin. Now with this three-level dip, you've got Smite, you've got whatever early Paladin stuff you have, and then when you do get multiple uses of your Channel Divinity per short rest, now you can use that Paladin one more. Whereas Paladin Channel Divinities are balanced around only being used once per short rest ever, you are potentially getting a strong Channel Divinity that you can use multiple times. Now, I don't know of one off the top of my head that I would, like, love to use multiple times per short rest.
Vow of Enmity.
There we go.
You give yourself advantage for a minute on a creature.
Yep.
Just full stop. No save or anything. Just happens. Yeah.
there's definitely some benefit there. You'd probably need advantage in order to hit because, again, your stats are all over the place.
I don't think it'd be too bad. So stats, I would ignore charisma in this build.
Yeah, if you're doing a dip into Paladin, strength, I wisdom. Agree.
Yeah. Because Paladins don't rely on charisma for too much. Like, they're attacking and their damage and stuff doesn't really use charisma at all. There's some spells that do, but, you know, primarily using spell slots for smiting. Charisma doesn't come up a ton of those. Just be careful on what you prepare each day. So it's kind of auras then, which are good. So if you have 14, what, you get plus 2?
Yes. Yeah.
Which is still a solid boost. Plus 2 to all your saving throws, that sort of stuff at like 6th or 7th level whenever that comes online.
6th.
And whatever.
And then 7th, they get their like unique aura to their thing, which right. Some of them and use not charisma, all, some don't.
Yeah, not all of them do. So I don't think it's you're missing out on much by just having kind of the minimum charisma. And then making sure wisdom and strength are high. Strength for the obvious, the melee attacks and stuff like that. Being able to wear heavy armor. And then the wisdom for all your cleric spells. Which it doesn't need to be 20. You can easily start each at 16 and then kind of see how you're playing and then decide which one do I want to get to 18 first, and then you can kind of level them up together.
Yeah, I guess so. I definitely think you're going to be holding back your cleric abilities pretty strongly while doing that, and I just don't know if you're getting that much out of Paladin. So you're getting the smites, cool. But then you're also getting, you know, if you go up to 6th level, you're getting the auras, which is really nice. But I feel like being able to cast higher level spells and 6 levels of Paladin means that you should be 3 levels higher. Or what is that even? No, you'd be 6 levels higher, of course, as a cleric. I don't know why my math is all off, but regardless, my point is you would be casting much higher level spells, which provide so much more than just about any aura can.
Sure. It just depends on how far you want to take it. If you want to mainly be a cleric spellcaster, and like, yeah, don't take Paladin very far. This is one you kind of a more even mix could be pretty decent in like trying to make a true gish. Like, for instance, this is obviously a high-level character. If you go 11 Paladin and then at least 8 in Cleric, and then yeah, you want an extra level to throw wherever you want, you get the Paladin's improved Divine Smite, so every attack does an additional D8. And then if you want one of the melee Clerics at 8th level, you get Divine Strike, which adds a D8 to their attacks, at least one attack. So then, Let's say you have a Greatsword, you hit, it does 2d6 plus 2d8 plus Strength. And then you have extra attacks, so then you hit again, and it goes 2d6 plus 1d8, maybe throw a smite on there, plus strength. Like, it's a lot of damage.
All right, I'm going to throw this back on you a little bit. You could also just go into Sorcerer and do, like, Booming Blade. And you're going to do more damage than that, and not have
to... But you only get one attack. No, I wouldn't... I would definitely disagree on saying you're going to do more damage, because you only get one attack.
Yeah, I guess, but it just does not feel worth it by any means having to split up your stats in that direction, and you're still just not getting a lot from the paladin aspect there besides extra attack and smite. Okay, you're getting smite. But
lay on hands, a fighting style.
Yeah, I'd rather just go two levels into fighter.
But that's not what we do. We talk.
I know.
If this is what you're doing,
right.
Here's what you can get. Here's how you can make it work.
I feel like we switched spots today. This is nice. I don't like it. I hear what you're saying. You're right. There's at least something you can get out of that. And if you are able to get all the way up to almost 20th level with it, then you can get your stacking extra damage on melee attacks. And you're still probably going to be casting a lot of spells, but at least clerics do get a lot of spells that are just kind of, you cast them, you concentrate on them, or you don't, like Spiritual Weapon,
exactly.
And then you just kind of forget about them. So getting Spiritual Weapon out of that is definitely worthwhile. And you're getting, you know, your two attacks, you get smites on top of it. Maybe you cast a little less spells and do a little bit more smiting, which obviously makes sense with the paladin aspects. There's something there, yeah.
Right. Also, the cleric levels will help with smiting. You get a lot more spells than you would just a pure paladin.
Right. Yeah, as long as you are fine to just completely ignore charisma and kind of... I wouldn't recommend... It's hard to recommend going up to even 6th level, but we're talking about going up to, what was that, 11th level for paladin?
Mm-hmm.
If you're not focusing on charisma, because I guess the only aura that matters... I'm sorry, I'm really trying to justify this. But you're right, the only auras that matter are ones that are affected by your charisma. So if you choose one that doesn't have the charisma specific stuff, it's only the 6th level one that's really hurt from not having high charisma.
Right.
How weird. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So I think Oath of Vengeance, if you want to play like a melee paladin, kind of more like a holy gish type character. It's also just kind of a paladin.
Yeah.
Just a paladin. If you want to do, you know, a little more of the spellcasting side, one of the melee clerics, like Forge Cleric or War Domain, is not really that great, but flavor wise it lines up. And then Oath of Vengeance doesn't really rely on charisma much at all. And then that's when you get at 3rd level when you take it, the Vow of Enmity with the advantage. Some really great oath spells at level 7 to get the Relentless Adventure. So they don't actually have an aura. Just if a foe retreats, you could, when you hit something with an opportunity attack, you can move half your speed.
That's right.
Them and not provoke your own. It just adds, stacks in well, makes you a better melee combatant without just completely stopping your spellcasting, giving you some additional spells, giving you smiting, which is, you know, 2 levels in, you get the smiting, and it's just golden. That doesn't scale at all. It scales on spell level, which cleric gets anyways.
All right, I can see that. I mean, it definitely stinks, like, not taking full advantage of your... 6th level aura, what is it called? Aura of Protection. But that said, I think you can get enough out of that to make it feel worthwhile.
Yeah, that's when anyone within 10 feet of you gets your charisma added to saving throws.
Right.
So you like a +2 to saving throw is, that's still really solid.
Right. And if you have, we'll say 20 on your strength and wisdom, I don't know how long that will take. But once you do get there, or even just 18 strength, maybe you throw some points into charisma and you get it up to 16 and you're happy there. Or maybe you rolled stats. If you rolled stats and you have just absurdly good ones, then a lot of this does kind of go out the window because it's less of a pain to be so split up. But that's obviously chance and depends on your table. But there are options there because I'm sure there are some people here listening who roll stats. I feel like a lot of our show goes out the window if you roll stats, because then it's like, oh, and a 1% chance everything works.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of hard to have that discussion, but...
Yeah, no, it is. One thing that you mentioned earlier, and I think is definitely important to bring up, is the cantrips aspect. The fact that this does give paladins access to cantrips, which they don't have otherwise. And if you are focusing on the wisdom side of things, then they can actually be worthwhile. I know that I played a paladin for a think a year plus long campaign, and one of my biggest issues was not having any ranged options, or at least anything that was really worthwhile. So having cantrips is a big, big plus to paladins for sure.
Totally. That being said, in Tasha's, there's the new optional fighting style blessed warrior where you gain 2 cleric cantrips.
And there's also other multi-classes that are charisma-based that have even better
cantrips. I know, but we're talking this, about I mean, this is what this you're is doing. Twofer. You've been this cursed.
This is the twofer. We have a new optional feature that blows this out of the window, and we have just like practical considerations about being a warlock.
I was going to say sorcerer, if anything, just because at least you can still fit the flavor that we're going for here. But yes, warlock would definitely be better in that regard.
Sure. I wouldn't do it just for the cantrips, but it's another plus.
Yep.
And then you could play a cool character that... So picture it's the cleric of a temple, and they're very soft-spoken and mild-mannered. They help out their flock in the town, and they heal people and whatever they can. And then the town gets attacked, and it's, all right, the fleet of the temple for protection. And then this cleric throws the robe off to reveal they're just jacked as shit underneath, wearing plate armor. And they pray something to their god and pull out an oversized great sword from underneath the altar in the temple, run out into the town, and just decimate everything with holy smites.
No, it's pretty cool. That's neat. I do specifically like the idea that they're wearing a robe that made them look smaller, and then when they took it off, people couldn't realize that they had plate armor underneath. Like, it just wasn't bulky enough, and they're like, whoa. Maybe not,
like half plate or something. Okay. Just some form of heavy armor.
I mean, it's there. I guess I'm really butting heads with the fact that that is also just the straight paladin if you want it to.
That it could absolutely just be a paladin. So, like I said earlier, I think it adds more weight, more bite to it if it's truly paladin cleric, because then you get, especially if you go like life domain or something like that, because then you really get mechanical things to lean on. The like, through most of your life and day to day, you are like the helpful, mild mannered cleric of your temple, the priest or priestess of your temple or whatever, who can then smite and is actually really strong. And they probably have Oath of Vengeance to add to the edge of that. And
Have to add Oath of Vengeance.
Right. Ooh, or they're an Oathbreaker. And then they're trying to redeem themselves through being a cleric to like a good aligned deity.
People got to stop using Oathbreaker in as player characters. They're not meant to be player characters. No, and we should not encourage that in the least bit.
Yeah, that's just like a huge demand for your DMs. Like, hey, I want to be an Oathbreaker paladin, and I want God to be like my new buddy. Can you make that happen?
And that's not even my issue with the ask. It's just so like undead focused and everything. It just doesn't seem like it really. It wasn't. It was in the DMG, right?
Yeah, it is. It's more of like to build a big bad evil guy with character levels,
right?
Yeah,
but again. Using this as a big bad evil guy, that's cool. So do that and do a Oathbreaker plus a Grave Cleric. And that sounds pretty edgy. Is there? Yeah, there is a Death Cleric, isn't there?
The Grave one's the friendly one.
That's it.
Death Cleric is the other DMG subclass.
Okay, yeah, just mishmash those together and see what happens. And that one is a... it doesn't gain proficiency in heavy armor, but it does get the martial weapons, and it is at 8th level, it gets the extra D8 necrotic damage when it makes a melee attack. So, yeah, that's what I'm walking away from on this, is I don't think it's a great player class, this killer paladin multi-class. I've heard what you've said, Kevin, and I agree with what you said, that there is a way to make it work. I still don't think it's worth it, and I don't think I'd encourage people to try and do it. but as an NPC, I feel like you can do a lot with that.
Sure. Or then as a PC, if you're trying... I kind of say there's two ways to approach multiclassing. We kind of do it from an optimizer's perspective, to be honest. And I know we talk and we work in role-playing and story and character concepts. But a lot of times it's like, here's the entity of my character. Here are the powers they have. because they are a paladin and a sorcerer and a warlock. And then here's the story we wrap around it for it to make sense and make it compelling. You could absolutely take multiclassing where, like, you are a cleric, and then naturally something happens where you take an oath and now start taking paladin levels and you ignore the cleric levels and now this is your new thing.
Sure.
And that has a lot of cool role-playing moments. We've definitely talked about this before with just paladin multiclasses.
Yep.
They're one of the multiclasses that is a ton of player agency and a ton of really cool opportunities because you are literally taking an oath. That's how they get their power. And it can drastically change how the player, how the character has to play. And it's usually something pretty extreme has had to happen for them, for a person, a humanoid, to do this. So I think there's a lot of cool stuff there.
That's fair. That's fair. There definitely is. And if you completely disassociate the mechanics from it, then yeah, I think it can naturally come out in ways that maybe people don't expect. So to lean into that and agree, if you are playing just a straight paladin, and well, I don't care about their sexuality in this case, but they just straight line keeping with paladin the entire time. And then, again, you have a more religious moment. It offers up role-playing opportunity in the same way that it would to any other class. A rogue who has a religious moment. You can still lean into that and have it be a focus. And I think what you've been bringing here is that there's a way to make it work and not destroy your character. As long as you're, you stop focusing on charisma in that case and go, okay, wisdom's going to be a little more important. And maybe after a couple of weeks, you're not as good as, some other people at the table, like mechanically as good. It's not the end of the world. The game keeps going. As long as your character's not dead, you keep role playing, you keep moving forward, and you're fine. The DM adjusts as necessary. I don't think you're completely destroying your character like a sorcerer does to a barbarian.
Right. And it just adds a lot more versatility.
Right. The one thing I would still suggest, though, is I really feel like you should be able to get a second use of Channel Divinity from it. I don't like that rule. And I feel like I would personally playtest that a little bit, and like just... If somebody came to our table with it, I'd be like, let's try it with the two channel divinities. And if it's feeling, broken for any reason, we'll adjust. Because I could see with like the life cleric, for example, getting that would officially be three uses at sixth level. And that is kind of ridiculous.
I think this doesn't need to be playtested. I think it's in there for a reason.
Yeah. That's fair. It sucks at low levels. Once you get the second use, it stops feeling as necessary.
And I think also, like, if your player comes in with, like, two piles of bad channel divinities, I can see tossing them the bone there.
Sure.
It's not going to help.
No, you're right. You're right. Mm-hmm. I'd say there's definitely some. Like, if it was the Forge Cleric and then the... what's one of the worst paladin ones? I don't know off the top of my head. But either way, Forge Cleric and then one of the paladin ones. And it's like, okay, you're not going to use these... ever. So I don't know why you need this two times per short rest or three or four, but take it. I don't care.
Right.
Don't even track it. Don't even tell me if you do. Just have it for free. I don't care.
Any other character concepts for this one?
I mean, but it's not a character concept. It's me ranting in complete disagreement with whatever we just said. So
perfect. Let's go for it.
I think the ideas that you get behind both of these classes are better served outside of the classes if you want to incorporate them into your characters. The default mode of religious worship is not being able to cast, Toll of the Dead. It's just a normal person firmly believing in a god. And I think that manifests better at the table than multiclassing. On the other side, you've got paladins with their oaths. Once again, when most people swear an oath of vengeance, they can't light things up with holy fire. They're just now consumed by the idea of vengeance. And that, I think, once again, plays better at the table without class mechanics.
I don't know if I'd say better. It could work. You could absolutely do that. And we definitely said that where you could do this with just being a paladin and just, like the mild manner keeper of the temple or whatever.
I think it's about if you want to add that weight. I think you said it earlier. It's like if you really want to add the weight to it, you are totally correct. And I think that is important to bring up and it shouldn't be ignored. You're right, Will. If you don't want to multiclass and you just want to be religious or you just want to have an oath, you shouldn't feel like you have to multiclass in order to show that. But it's an option. And if it's really, you know, if it is super important to your character and you want to throw that in, yeah, it's there.
And I get that, but I think when you say if it's super important, I think it can be super important and not manifest itself mechanically, and you probably will have more fun. Throwing the weight of the class mechanics behind these ideas, like we have a lot of these examples of really cool class combinations where the mechanical viability just drives it home. Whereas this, it just doesn't. It's not good enough to really sell itself on the idea where you can just kind of get by without it.
Sure. Like, I guess you're saying like if a barbarian wants to be a artificer or like start making potions, that's not really shown by them just being like, oh, I'm going to make potions now, because they can't do that. They don't really have any rule set for it. But if they start actually taking levels in Artificer, yes, the mechanics are rough to work around, but there's a lot that they're getting out of it. They're starting to make magic items, and people are like, wow, where did this come from this barbarian? But I guess what you're saying is if you're a paladin and then you go cleric, it's kind of like, oh yeah, you're doing all the things you could do before.
That's yeah, fair. There's definitely overlap in the spell lists.
The spell list one kind of bothered me a little bit because I was trying to think of all of the like cleric spells that don't require wisdom, and every single one of them you get as a paladin. Shield of Faith, or sorry, every low level one. I didn't look at the very high level stuff, but like Shield of Faith, sure, for example, that is a paladin spell. You don't need it. Bless, that's a paladin spell. You don't need to go cleric for it. And everything else was pretty wisdom focused. Or spell casting modifier focused.
Right. Requires a save, yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't know. Do you guys have anything else to say around this multiclass?
I don't. Yeah, this could be a shorter episode.
This has probably been like two hours. We always say, everything is like, oh, it's a shorter episode. It's like, oh, nope.
It's going to come out to around half an hour.
Ah, sweet. Yeah, actually a short one. I'll take it.
Yeah.
All right, well, before we go, I will segue over into today's sponsor-ish. I don't know. We're horrible at this. Today's episode is brought to you by Describe. Describe creates finely crafted box texts. You can use Describe to paint a vivid description and bring your fantasy world to life. They have wonderfully crafted descriptions of locations, peoples, planes, and now they even have some dialogue suggestions as well. And you can check it out at Describe.com and use the code MM10 to get 10% off your subscription.
And I know you meant like metaphysical planes, but I picture like airplanes.
Yes, you can use like it to describe airplanes.
Airplanes, yeah, just different, all the types of airplanes.
Every time I'm at the table, and as a DM, I try to describe an airplane. And you know what? I just fall short. I go, it's got wings? And they go, like a bird? And I'm like, ah, oh, if only I had some finely crafted box tests for this moment.
Type in a Boeing 747, get technical specs, exact wingtip to wingtip measurements to give. It's fantastic.
Thank you, as always, to our patrons. And they are... Craig A, Bob F, Ed G, Home Bakery, Adam A, Starred for Shinobi, Sentinel D20, Isaac M, Vincent M, Joe P, and Jeff W. Thank you for your continued support of our show. Love you all, and I have nothing else to say.
As always, thanks for watching.